This episode of 365 Days of Astronomy is sponsored by the Education and Outreach Team for the Messenger Mission to Planet Mercury. Follow the mission as the spacecraft helps to unlock the secrets of the inner solar system at www.messenger-education.org.
You are about to listen to the 365 Days of Astronomy podcast.
What do they talk about?
Astronomy, you know, stuff that's far away.
How far?
How far? Well,
this stuff is far.
It's really far.
This stuff is far, far, far away. We're talking far.
Like uber far.
You can't get there by car today. It's super duper crazy. Far, but not just pulsars, quasars, and stars. We mean it's far.
Far, far,
far,
far.
If there's some doubt, listen to a shout.
This stuff is far.
IYA 365 Days of Astronomy podcast starts now.
Welcome to the 365 Days of Astronomy podcast. I'm Bob Hirshon, host of the AAAS radio show and podcast Science Update. I'm reporting this week from the American Geophysical Union Conference in San Francisco, where it's damp and foggy, as it should be here in December. Nonetheless, spirits are high. And not just from the occasional clouds of marijuana smoke wafting across Market Street near the Moscone Convention Center. No, it's mostly the energy you get from 19,000 scientists gathered in one place. Probably the largest contingent is related to atmospheric science, including climate, past, present, and future. And of course, lots of geologists and seismologists, but there's also a good-sized group of planetary scientists. The secretary for the AGU Planetary Science Section is Linda Elkins Tanton from MIT, and she's helping organize the planetary science sessions and posters. She says this year there are a large number of presentations related to active spacecraft.
We have so many results from space missions, European and Japanese space missions, and those from NASA. We have results from Rosetta, from the European Union, and Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter, and the Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter, of course, the Mars rovers, looking at the inner solar system MESSENGER and Venus Express inner solar system, and then the outer solar system, also Rosetta and Cassini.
She says there's been a growth in research related to the possibility of life on other worlds and talks related to the field.
We had a fantastic talk by John Eiler from Caltech, who gave the Sagan Award lecture about habitability on planets. And we have quite a number of different sessions with many, many contributions from researchers.
While some deal with the possibility that the inner planets do, or more likely once did, harbor life, there's growing interest in the potential for life on outer planets, and especially their satellites.
Icy moons like Mimas and Enceladus, and Caroline Porco has again organized her excellent Enceladus session looking at the stability of liquid water, which is thought to be critical for life on Enceladus.
And I'm sorry, what's Enceladus?
This is a moon of Saturn, which she's been investigating with the Cassini mission, and many other people are working on Enceladus and other icy moons of our outer planets, looking for places where life could live.
Tom Spilker is a mission architect at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory, and he has a poster here on the work on the Bidecadal Survey, a sort of look back at what scientists have learned about the solar system in the past decade and a look forward to the next decade.
It's looking at the science that we've learned in the past 10 years, what the state of planetary science in many different disciplines is right now, and notably, what are the highest priority science objectives that we could go after in the 10 years that it's interested in, 2013 to 2022. So it's the major thing is prioritizing those science objectives, and from that, looking at what missions would we want to fly to accomplish the highest priority objectives.
His group's focus was a potential future mission called the Saturn Ring Observer. He explains that Saturn's rings are about 300,000 kilometers wide, but only about 10 meters thick. The goal for the Saturn Ring Observer would be to get a close-up look at the rings from just outside them.
Given that Saturn's rings look like a very, very thin old phonograph record, what we want to do is stay just outside of the plane of that record, looking down on the individual particles, watching them collide, watching them get into these things we call waves, get into wakes where the particles collide and form long, thin structures that then break up. And We want to see how do these particles behave when they collide, how much energy do they lose. It's not only tied up with how Saturn rings work, but it's also tied up with how planets come together in these accretion disks that form around stars that eventually become planets. So we're trying to find out how do these individual particles behave, and we're putting a spacecraft just out of the ring plane using ion engines to keep us out of that ring plane, looking down at those individual particles and how they move.
One of the lighter events here at the conference was a reception called Science Meets Hollywood, featuring both Hollywood producers who look to science for inspiration and scientists who work with them to make sure they get the science right. Seth Shostak, senior astronomer at SETI, the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence, is one of those scientists. He told me that Hollywood is more interested in the science behind their stories nowadays, and he thinks he knows one reason why.
Today, you can watch a movie or a television show on, you know, your handheld device or on your iPad or whatever on your computer, and that means if you see something that looks interesting, you can back it up and look at it again and again and again, and then you can get onto your blog and tell the world, these guys really messed up because this very elementary science fact seems to have escaped the writers. That didn't used to be the case in the old days. You just sat there in the theater and watched the show go by, and there was no stopping it, and there was no blogging it. Today, I think that they care to get things right simply because they want to avoid a little bit of bad publicity.
As for films and television serving a useful educational purpose, well, it's a case of buyer beware.
You can learn science from Hollywood movies. You can learn science from Star Trek, and a lot of people do. The trouble is, a lot of it is just wrong. So what you're learning, there's no guarantee. It's sort of like getting information off the Internet. It's not warranted to be a refereed journal, and the science you see in the local Cineplex might be right, and then again, might not.
But it might get you into it.
The thing about science fiction films is that they grab you emotionally, and then you might be incentivized, if I can use that word, to go read a book or learn some real science.
Elkins Tanton says that incentivizing people, especially young people, to take an interest in science is also something big conferences like AGU hope to accomplish, with events like tonight's Hollywood Science Reception, a presentation on climate change by John Holdren, science advisor to President Obama, and a variety of other meetings and events open to the general public.
But what we need to do with planetary science and with all the science that we do is make it relevant and interesting and accessible to people who are not scientists. And that's part of what we try to do here at this meeting.
For the 365 Days of Astronomy podcast, I'm Bob Hirshon.
Additional support for this episode of 365 Days of Astronomy is provided by Wayne Robertson, who encourages you to join him in supporting this great podcast.
You are listening to the IYA 365 Days of Astronomy podcast. Cool.
The 365 Days of Astronomy podcast is produced by Astrosphere New Media Association. Audio post-production by Preston Gibson. Bandwidth donated by Libsyn.com and Wizard Media. Web design by Clockwork Active Media Systems. You may reproduce and distribute this audio for non-commercial purposes. Please consider supporting the podcast with a few dollars or euros. Visit us on the web at 365daysofastronomy.org or email us at info@365daysofastronomy.org. Until tomorrow, goodbye.